This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good morning, I'm Sharad Kutin, and with me, Kusu Chuang. Good morning. The morning stretch begins.
The morning stretch.
Then stretches into the morning run. Isn't it? The morning run. You stretch then, and then you run, isn't then, it? Yeah. Warm up, isn't it?
Correct. We warm up, then we start jogging, then we run, and then we sprint, and then we...
You're a bit of a spotty lad.
There's
a
bit spotty or sporty?
Sporty.
Sporty, yes.
You're flawless skin.
Well,
almost.
Thank you.
Yeah, for, at least from this distance.
Clarisil, old boy.
Clarisil, yeah. Oh my God.
1490 from
dead. Okay, tell me. Isn't there a debate about whether you should stretch before you go for a run? Or
beyond
whether
question,
you should...
No question. You've got to stretch. You've got to warm up.
But you know, some people saying that you really first have to warm yourself up before you stretch. There's a difference between stretching and warming up because you could have these micro tears in your muscles.
Really, yeah? I don't know, man.
I didn't know that.
We just get straight into it.
Okay. Now, we have a wonderful day of a wonderful programming for you lined up. The weather, I can't say very much about it, except...
It was actually quite nice this morning. Nice and cool and, you know, windy and stuff.
But the day then, you know, changes into this... Either it's, like, blisteringly hot, or it's threatening to rain, or there's, in fact, torrential downpours.
Actually, no, it doesn't, because it's a dry season. It's the dry season part of the southwestern monsoon or something.
But you remember last week. Last week is terrible. And, in fact, but we have to count our blessings. It could be worse. I mean, torrential downpours in countries like Bangladesh are causing landslides and people are losing their lives. So, well, thank you, lucky stars.
You come into the UK and suffer through gloomy, cold, miserable, rainy weather for ages.
All the gloomy politics. But on that front, interestingly enough, one of the bright sparks on the horizon, Emmanuel Macron, the newly minted president of the Republic of France, says that there is still a possibility of the UK remaining in the EU, an option that's open until the Brexit negotiations are concluded. And that's a very interesting statement to make. And I'm wondering if he's sensing that that British politicians might be, you know, what suffering from, what a buyer's regret, is it?
Well, yeah, and the fact that Theresa May's gamble on the election has kind of like backfired. She's lost her majority. It's now a parliament that is extremely well hung, and that's obviously put a scupper in the works in terms of the Brexit direction.
Okay, you know, interestingly enough, you know, she had this statement. She said, "I got us in this mess. I'll get us out of it."
Fighting talk.
But is that the kind of thing? Logically, if somebody gets you into a bit of trouble, do you still want to place your bets on that person to get you out of it? Or would you say, hey, you know, I think you've lost the bet. Maybe it's somebody else's chance now to deal with the problem.
I find it intriguing that she actually took the rap for the Brexit, because she wasn't actually directly involved. There was people like Boris Johnson, people like Jeremy Corbyn.
Yeah, she was a Remainer, but very passively, right? But the problem is that once the vote came in, she went full on, and she saw the opportunity to seize the leadership of the party, seize the position of prime minister, and you know, and she thought she was making hay until
the sun shone. Yeah,
yeah, because the sun didn't shine for too long. Well, that drama continues, and I think we're going to be covering it until it finishes. Emmanuel Macron, of course, had a really good outing with the start of the first round of the parliamentary elections in France, and he's looking at having his party or movement really win a landslide. And next Sunday is the concluding part of the parliamentary election. So he's on a really happy wicket, big smile on his face.
Yeah, we've got to be on the edge of our seats, you know, watching the results of those outcomes.
Okay, we'll be back with more. This is the Velvet Underground with Rock and Roll, BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, that was the Velvet Underground with Rock and Roll.
Lou Reed, no less.
No less. The late.
No, he's yes. still alive.
No, he is.
He shuffled off this mortal coil.
And he's gone on to a better place.
Yes.
Oh, Oblivion, I think, is what they call it. Which is the place that maybe...
most rock and roll stars go to, you know?
No, I was thinking of Uber boss Travis Kalanick. Kalanick. Now, he's in big trouble, Uber trouble.
Uber trouble.
Not necessarily for something he did directly. And if you remember, the troubles began, at least in this quarter, on a social media posting by one, a former employer, who said that there was a lot of sexism in the organization, and that led to investigations. Now it's really become a question of who he is and the kind of leadership that he has. And
well, this unicorn of unicorns, this $65-70 billion behemoth, has now got no CEO, no chief CEO, no CBO, which is chief business officer, no CFO.
Why? Because people have been CMO. Quitting. People have been quitting, right?
Yeah, people have been quitting. There's a whole bunch of problems. There's alcohol in the workplace. There's sexual harassment in the workplace. There's all kinds of stuff going on there. And they've actually had to call in the Attorney General. I think the Attorney General or something.
A former Attorney General,
investigate proceedings at Uber.
Right. So Eric Holder, isn't it?
That's right.
To do some sort of honest broking in that discussion. But there's only question here really about organizational culture, and whether if you're not responsible for actually being
then
sexist,
then
should you take the fall? And should you take a fall for something that's not core to your business, right? So, but let's put it this way. So one of an investor and a mentor of Kalanick, Mark Cuban, said of him, Travis's biggest strength is that he will run through a wall to accomplish his goals. Travis's biggest weakness is that he will run through a wall to accomplish his goals. That's the best way to describe him. And it's interesting, right? So what is your strength can also become your weakness, I think, in this instance.
Correct, because once a company gets to a certain size, you have got to, the company's founders are not as always the best managers of the business. They're not the best progressors of the business. I mean, you look no further than Google. At some point, Larry Page and Sergey Brin, they took a back seat and they allowed Eric Schmidt to come in. The same thing with Cisco, when they called in professional managers. And at some point in time, you've got to make that transition. Same with Uber.
Yeah, but there's a huge celebration of what they call startup culture. And in fact,
yeah, but at some point in time, you've got to dial back. Because okay, I mean,
the question is when, right? And in fact, today, Chuang, on the BBC, after the 9:30 news, we're going to be looking at that. And there's going to be a big discussion on startup culture. And really, which is the point at which you say you're no longer a startup and you have to act in ways that are different. You cannot no longer get those dividends that come from being a startup.
Yeah, because, I mean, there are so many companies in our ecosystem. I mean, we can see them within our own eyes. Obviously, media companies especially, there has got to be tough decisions being made about the future direction, whether you expand, whether you buy more. And, Uber has come to the crossroads and they're struggling.
One of the things, of course, is we talk about, in this particular instance, about organizational sexism, right? So gender biases against women and maybe even outright impunity that's given to men, those in positions of power, to be sexist, to make sexual advances on juniors and such. But there's also this other side of Uber, which has been revealed over and over again, about them cheating their drivers. Just basically class warfare on the working people of various cities. I think New York City cabs in particular.
I think you're right, because a company's founder puts his personality and charismatic stamp on the business. And if you look at some of the values at Uber, some of the cultural values, like things like let builders build, always be hustling, meritocracy and toe-stepping, principled confrontation, all these things have been used to justify poor behavior among staffers at Uber. And these are all attributes of Travis Kalanick in terms of his bulldozing through decisions.
Could you repeat the last one, which is interesting?
Principled confrontation.
There's a very nice thing
because
to
there's
say.
No such thing as principled confrontation. There's only one winner and one loser.
Yeah, and
you want to be the winner.
Yeah, and chances are there's more confrontation than principles,
correct,
right?
Correct.
The principle is the confrontation and winning.
Correct.
But
the principle is victory.
But in this day and age, we celebrate success. I mean, if somebody's got a couple of billion to their name, we almost are blind.
This demigod of, this paragon of success. I disagree because we come from Asia, Shrad, and there's much more to it than meets the eye.
Really? In Asia, are we not?
Well,
do we not,
worship
mammon? Do we not bow before the god of money?
We come from thousands of years of culture and philosophy.
Do you?
In India and China. I mean, success doesn't always mean wealth. It doesn't mean material possessions. I mean, spiritual fulfillment. It means, you know, things like being good to your fellow human being.
Can I suggest a novel about contemporary China by a guy called Mo Yan? It's The Republic of Wine. Now that
fantastic, I've heard of that title actually.
Yeah, and I've read it. Yeah. And
is it good?
Oh, it's brilliant. It's funny. It really captures the zeitgeist of China today. Nothing like you said. Nothing about philosophy.
I know. But that we know of. But there's a whole underbelly that I'm sure still subscribe to those ideologies.
Absolutely. And, you know, it's something that we have to remind ourselves, because the thicket for which we view the world is full of these billion-dollar companies and their founders who are heroic. They're demigods.
But what about those celebrated, what about some of those personalities that, for example, teachers or nurses or mothers, they're not celebrated in the same way. Something's obviously distorted about our society.
Yeah, perhaps. But so Travis Kalanick, a god with clay feet, perhaps.
Yes.
Now, after these messages, we have Another Day by Paul McCartney, BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, that was Another Day by Paul McCartney. I'm Sharad Kutin with me, Kusu Chuang.
Good morning, old boy.
You know, yesterday we had a Twitter poll and we asked people, would you want a meat-free world, with a link to a story about the consequences, both good and bad, of going meat-free. And 24% of people said, this is, you know, over 100 or so people, participate in the poll. 24% said, yes, they would go meat-free, but overwhelming...
Said no,
because they don't want to give up their red meat. They don't want to give up their lifestyles. But what's interesting is this study about the effects, positive effects on the planet, really kind of pitch it at 2050. So by that time, Chuang, we'll be deep into our 80s. At least you'll be late into your 70s.
Yes, that's a depressing thought. Thank you so much for the reminder, Sharad.
No, I mean, it's just a simple question of math, isn't it?
Well, yeah, it is. But, what you eat really, a lot of people identify themselves with their consumption habits, right?
Don't yeah.
You think? I think I'm a beer-swilling, steak-eating, gun-toting American, right? I'm a red-blooded American.
You know, a German philosopher, Feuerbach, once said famously, you are what you eat.
You are what you eat.
Okay, talking about being depressed, because I mentioned the unescapable fact of aging.
I've never seen a happy vegetarian. They always got this scowl on their face and they're walking around with don't you think?
No, it's not true. India's full of vegetarians and lots of them are happy,
really?
I guess. I don't know. Yeah. Ahmad Fuad Ramad, who is a co-host he's a vegetarian. Important to note, though, that being depressed or being sad is okay, Chuang. In fact, it's so okay.
There's no excuse for being depressed and sad. No, there's no excuse, Sharad. Really, I mean, honestly, right? Life is beautiful. The grass is green. The birds are singing. The sky is blue.
So, okay, this is what they call...
Your friends are beautiful.
This is what they call the cult of happiness. So this article in Quartz magazine suggests that, in fact, sadness or, and depending how sad you are, you can calibrate it. You can call it depression.
Can you? Really?
You can call it
funk. Or how happy you are.
You're blue funk, whatever you want to, you want to go...
I thought you said something else.
Tennessee Williams. A blue funk, Breakfast at Tiffany's. The important thing is that it's part of the repertoire of emotions that human beings have. But in this day and age, we are called to be happy all the time, 24/7. And it's not good for us. We should give space to be moody. Now, when you have kids, Chuang, when your kids are moody or sad...
Oh, my God, I'm in a worst possible mood. I feel like killing people. I feel like hitting objects. I've got a boxing bag in my house because I just need to take some stuff out sometimes.
Oh, right.
Yeah, I do. Yeah,
boxes aren't cool for your kids, is it?
No. It's red.
So
it's leather.
How do you deal with, say, the emotions of your kids? Do you indulge them? Do you say it's fine to be sad? It's fine to be angry or moody?
My kids are never sad. They're always in the stratosphere somewhere. It sends me mad.
Is it, you give them too much sugar?
I don't know, I don't know what it is. I've got no idea what it is.
No, but okay. Did you grow up then in a family where being sad or being moody was acknowledged and respected? I mean, you were given your space.
We never really thought about it, Sharad. You know, when you were, you were, and when you weren't, you weren't. And,
you know,
and that's what it is.
Yeah, well, my mother would always say to me, it's okay. Because sometimes I would just be in, I didn't have a reason to be sad, apparently. And she would just hug me and she'd say, it's okay.
She indulged me that way, and I
thought it was very good. I think it's made me a very healthy, well-adjusted human being. No. She might not think so now, but that's a different thing.
I grew up in a household where there's always paroxysms of laughter.
Paroxysms?
No. I did that for you, Sharon.
Oh my goodness. This is something out of Mary Poppins.
It is?
Wasn't there?
Is it one of those old words which the people don't use anymore?
Yeah,
you know,
Mary Poppins is a very old movie.
And it's coming back, by the way. It's a new movie.
Oh.
It is.
But, you know, in fact, what is also very interesting to watch, if you ever get a chance, is Saving Mr. Banks, which is the backstory.
I've seen Saving Private Ryan.
This is Saving Mr. Banks, which is the backstory of the author and Walt Disney in the creation.
I've seen that. It's pretty good.
It's pretty good. And in fact, if you remember one of the
it's
scenes.
It's better than a kick in the teeth, Sharad, I'm telling you.
Well, so much in life is better than a kick in the teeth, Chuan.
Better than a poke in the eye.
Okay, I can see where you're going, Mr. Mary Poppins. We'll be back after this. In fact, we have Lenny Kravitz. And it ain't over till it's over. BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, that was the mellow sounds of Peter Green and In the Skies. Chuang and me, Sharad, we didn't quite finish the conversation earlier about the benefits of being sad. I thought, since we tweeted
out... Are there benefits to being sad?
Well, apparently, according to this article, they are not pathologically depressed, right? So that's another and a somewhat debilitating disorder. But what they say, and I'm going to quote here, says, mild temporary bad moods may serve an important and useful adaptive purpose by helping us to cope with everyday challenges and difficult situations. They also act as a social signal that communicates disengagement, withdrawal from competition, and provides a protective cover. When we appear sad or in a bad mood, people are often concerned and inclined to help. But some negative moods, such as melancholy and nostalgia, may even be pleasant and seem to provide useful information to guide future plans and motivations. Sadness can also enhance empathy, compassion, connectedness, and moral and aesthetic sensibilities. And sadness has long been a trigger for artistic creativity. So, that's the charge sheet. Right? So sadness.
It's a charge sheet.
Well, you know. That's what sadness can potentially say.
I think that's actually spot on, because Vincent van Gogh, he painted some of his best works when he was in a proper funk. I mean, he had no money. He had no friends. He had no family by his brother. And he produced some of his best works.
I think that, okay, not to kind of also romanticize depression. Because
no, you're right. I mean, it's a debilitating illness.
Yeah. But so the idea is that, do we live in a time that that allows us to have this as part of the spectrum, right? So it's not to say you should be sad all the time to be creative, but the idea is that whether you're creative or not, that sadness is just one of those moods, and it should be respected as such, and people should be given the place and time. So I asked you about your children because I was thinking about how we socialize people into believing that something is good or bad. So if they're sad, we say, no, you should never be sad. You should always put a brave front on and in a smile through your challenges.
You know what this is? This is over an analysis of human behavior, because people should just be allowed to be. Why are we analyzing and writing stories in courts and having health analysis
and
psychologists? I mean, why should human beings be under the spotlight all the time and being microscopic about all this?
Well, you know, the problem is that in the past, all this would have been allowed and permissible.
Yeah,
and even
back in the day.
But now, because of the cult of happiness, which you amply demonstrated earlier.
I've got
batty.
Instagram video showing how happy you are, Sharad.
You are, but it's in your private things. You can't.
No, I've switched to the public.
Oh, you can't. So now what Chuang is trying to do is solicit followers for
Instagram. I'm not. I'm very selective about who, because it's public.
Because it's public. Okay. It's just me doing a little, you know, dance during the break. Now,
yes.
Okay, so that is the discussion about sadness, and you know, to conclude it. But we've tweeted out the link, so you can always read it. It's quite a serious and involved article, so a lot of food for thought there. Also food for thought in the news, very recently the Pera MB, Zambri, said that mayoral appointments should be merit-based, which is a very interesting statement he made.
Shouldn't it be all political appointments being merit-based rather than just mayoral?
Well, you know, so what he's responding to, because you think, yeah, well, that's good. And then the question
is... Well, it's common sense, isn't it?
Yeah, well, yes and no.
Based on the ability to run, manage government.
Because the because you might say that you want a democracy, you want elections. Now, elections don't always vote in the best person, you know, Donald Trump.
Donald Trump,
you know,
chiefly.
So, because that's about popularity. So, democracies are a popularity contest. Merit systems might or might not be democratic in nature, right? So,
Then you've got people like countries like Singapore, which are mainly meritocratic, but and based on the ability in university or whatever.
Yeah, so scholastic achievement right? that uses a yardstick to demonstrate merit.
And would you say Singapore is a well-run government? A popular government? Not necessarily, but well-run maybe.
Yeah, I mean, in fact, well-run might even be popular. And I think the popularity has been manufactured to some extent. But I think there's also some genuine belief that the performance of the government has been very high. But I do want to kind of put this statement in context, though, because the head of the MCA very recently said that Chinese majority cities really should have Chinese mayors. And it was an interesting statement.
Chinese majority cities were in Malaysia?
In Malaysia.
Do we have cities that are Chinese majority?
Yeah, of course.
City? Because there's only a few cities in Malaysia,
Well, there are quite a few now, actually. And you think of Penang, I think Ipoh is probably one of them.
Georgetown, not Penang.
Johor.
State. Really? Johor Bahru?
Yeah, Georgetown.
It's not Chinese majority, is it? It can't be.
Johor Bahru?
Yeah.
I'm sure it is. But then, I stand corrected. I don't know at this point. But
because the last census was done years ago, so...
Yeah, but you know, what I think the MCA chief was doing was suggesting that it was important to have representation. So representation is the other principle that clashes with the principle of merit. And the question is for Malaysians, which side on the coin are we going to fall in this discussion? Something to chew on as we listen to Stevie Wonder, Sign, Seal, Delivered. That's our politics, really, isn't it? BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, I'm Sharad Kutin, and with me, Kusu Chuang, and the morning rolls on. You got a big smile on your face there, Chuang.
I always have a great conversation with you, Sharad. Yeah, it's not just good, it's great.
It's great. Speaking of great, the baby Kim, who rules North Korea.
Kim?
Yeah, well, you know, he's a grandchild, right?
Yeah.
Of the man who started the dynasty, as it were, now is being visited by Dennis Rodman, who, of course, is a U.S. basketball star. Now,
was a U.S. basketball star.
Well, okay, so his star has waned, has it?
Yeah.
Oh, somewhat. Okay, the important thing was he made a very, kind of media-frenzied visit to North Korea some years ago. Now he's back and he's saying he's trying to help smooth relations. And I wonder sometimes about the role that celebrities play, because this is an instance, where celebrities are playing a role in politics that is slightly different from the kind of the run-of-the-mill kind.
Yeah, I remember back in the day when I saw Bob Geldof and he started talking about politics in Africa and he had this song. So why are pop stars getting involved with politics? And, you know, people like Bono and all that, right? But is it because they've got public standing?
Well, I think that's one. I mean, maybe their sense of responsibility, they're leveraging on the fact that they have so much influence and visibility. But,
so
they've
been asked to be, you know, ambassadors or something?
Yeah, but you
I mean, hardly, Dennis Rodman's hardly an ambassador for anything. I mean, he's wrong on so many... Well, he used to be wrong on so many counts.
Okay, there are many ways in which this can be used, right? If you look back at the 50s during the Cold War, the American State Department used musicians, especially African-American musicians, think of Louis Armstrong, to travel the world and put out a message kind of subtly that America's race relations weren't as bad as it was being portrayed globally. because their race relations were terrible at that point in time.
Oh, this is in the 60s, right?
Yeah. So if there's a book about it. It's called Satchmo Blows the World. And this is about...
Amazing title. I love that title.
Yeah. And it's about the use of musicians and celebrities in a propaganda war during the Cold War. During the Cold War, it was used in this particular way. Today, you might have, in the case of, say, Dennis Rodman, or even... And I'm thinking of that American...
Angelina Jolie and going to Africa.
She was an ambassador for the UN. So there you have an institution using a celebrity, right, for a particular purpose to give visibility. So basically, the issue, I think it was landmines, was it? Or something like
somewhere
that?
Like, yeah. Somalia or something.
Yeah. So, piggybacking on her fame. But what about, and I'm thinking of celebrities who, Sean Penn, I'm thinking of Sean Penn, remember, and his own attempts to kind of get involved in politics.
Well, most recently.
Or Lou Grant.
Sean Penn was most recently, he came to notoriety in a Rolling Stone article because he had met with Pablo Escobar, the drug lord.
That's
right.
He set it up.
Extraordinary access to Escobar.
Yeah. So the whole point is that you have also these maverick celebrities who have their own politics. And, I think of somebody like, not a movie celebrity, but a sporting celebrity. I think of Muhammad Ali.
Ali was an amazing ambassador, right?
Right. But he was ambassador for his own worldview. He wasn't an ambassador for the U.S.
Because he was deeply unpopular with the U.S. government at the time.
Yeah, he was very critical. He said he wasn't going to fight in the Vietnam War because...
He wasn't going to fight in the Vietnam War.
Yeah, he wasn't because no Viet Cong had ever called him nigger.
That's
right. Remember that very famous statement
he
made?
Exactly. And he instantly became an icon because of that. And he was so right.
Yeah. So you've had these maverick celebrities who bring their own politics, their own worldview and stamp on the politics of the day. They're very strategic in their intervention. I'm not quite sure what Dennis Rodman is going to achieve by going to North Korea.
But he's got a sponsor, apparently, Potcoin. Now, what is Potcoin? Because apparently, now I find out from the New York Times, Potcoin offers banking services to the legal marijuana industry. So he's there for weed, essentially. I don't know. It's really weird, right?
Oh, well, okay. I thought it was about kind of calming tensions on the North Korean
peninsula. Hardly. Yeah, Dennis Rodman with his lip ring and nose rings.
But he's well liked by the dictator, the young dictator.
He's about four times the height of the dictator. So they've got to sit down and
But
talk,
I think
right?
the dictator's girth more than makes up for the lack of height that he has. So if you add his height plus his girth...
You've got the perfect human being.
No, you've got Dennis Rodman.
No, you've got Donald Trump.
Anyway, we'll be back after this. Counting Crows and Accidentally in Love, BFM 89.9. Good morning. I'm Sharad Kutin with me, Kusu Chuang, and the morning run rolls on. We have more items in the news to talk about, mull over, including a statement made by the Prime Minister recently that social media users should spread positive news about the country and just positive news in general. And so we spoke to Ahmad Fuad Ramat, who, of course, is the host of BFM's Night School, a kind of budding philosopher in his own right. And we asked him how he thinks Malaysians will respond to this call.
Well, largely in ridicule, right? So it's not because of the request, but because of making it. I think that has a lot to do with the context as well. There's a lot of cynicism about politics right now. The general election is coming, but you can tell, if we compare the atmosphere this year and, say, 4 years ago, you can see, a lot more cynicism about where politics is heading, right? Because the opposition is seen as not really offering a viable alternative. They are unorganized, they're bickering, they're not coherent, they don't have a shared platform. So a lot of frustration get expressed online, right? And this is not really thought out expressions. A lot of the sharing and the comments made are really largely out of frustration without really taking into account, the repercussions, right? So politically, you see this in a lot more, negative criticism that's going both ways, right? So Malaysians are just tired. And given that they don't have real political options, they don't see any real viable alternatives in the horizon, they're just going to be venting and frustrated. And a lot of this is going to be directed to politics, right? Obviously, the current government is going to get the brunt of it because they're in power. But you see this as well being directed to the opposition, you know. It's not going to make an impact.
That was Ahmad Fuad Rahmat, host of BFM's Night School, speaking about, or commenting rather, on the Prime Minister's call for social media users to spread positive messages. And I don't know what more can be said, because I think in many ways Fuad nails it, right? There's a tremendous amount of cynicism for both sides of the political divide in this country. Of course, those in power, you know, always get the brunt of it. But, you know, the federal opposition is also in power in two states, in the states of Selangor and in Penang. And if we look at the front page of this morning, Sina Harian, Selangor has just announced a two-month bonus for civil servants, which some cynics might say is all about the upcoming general elections.
Yeah, what can I say? I mean, social media, do you use it as a platform to express honest views or dishonest views? I mean, it's very personal, right? And it's nowadays, there's so many platforms, whether it's Instagram or Twitter or Facebook, Snapchat, WeChat, whatever. And, you know, like it or not, Malaysians in great numbers are social media subscribers, and we have taken to the internet like a duck to water, or ducks to water. So can you compel people to make, you know, statements which might not necessarily reflect their views? I don't know. I don't think so.
Well, you know, that's it, right? So what is the call? Is it just...
unrealistic. I mean...
Yeah, that's right. And it's apparently a kind of Asian thing. I remember one of my, my lecturers at university... he used to say that there's almost a naivete among Asian leaders who believe in the exhortation to.
Yeah, exactly.
So they exhort their populations to kind of be positive and, you know, make sacrifices for the nation.
China, and, North Korea, yeah. Japan, Malaysia, Singapore.
Yeah. So in all those countries, right, that political rhetoric of exhorting your population or the voter base to do certain
things. Those days are gone.
Yeah,
right?
So yeah, they're gone because communication is no longer one way. It isn't directed or channeled through, it's through ways that are controlled by the state. You know, they're multiple. They sometimes completely bypass and ignore states and political leaders.
And you know what young people are like? As soon as they're told to do something or not to do something, they'll do the complete opposite. It's the forbidden fruit syndrome.
Yeah,
and I know a lot about a bunch of young people below 30 years old. They've never read a mainstream newspaper in their lives. They get all the news on Facebook,
and that's
they've never picked up a paper. You know, the New Straits Times or the Star, or the Sun, whatever. They've never picked it up.
Right. So unless the Prime Minister's statement is viralized some way, they're not going to get it. I mean, unless you know, because they're not going to be reading the NSTs or the Stars or whatever.
No.
That often gives space to a prominent space to statements coming out of government, and so they're not going to be tuning into RTM anytime soon. They're not going to be looking for adding Banama to their Twitter feed as a way of getting the news of the world. And so what happens to these statements? Do they just fall on deaf ears? Is it really then about, and is government so naive, or is it really about those they can control, people in the civil service, people in the armed forces? What is it that, and who is it being targeted by statements like this?
Oh, they just say it because there's so bunch of throwaway comments by politicians, it's almost become farcical. But it must gall them, isn't it, Sharad? Because in there's so many platforms now, whether it's it used to be BlackBerrys, right? But we can't really track conversations. It's known as the dark web, yeah? Or the grey web, at least. You know, WhatsApp messages are not viewed by... And they make a big deal about encryption, right? You know, WhatsApp, WeChat, whatever chat. You know, there's a whole bunch of platforms that are Periscope for another... But there's so many of these conversations taking place on things like that that are not being viewed by government. It must gall them to no end.
Yeah, but you know, in fact, we had news, I think just yesterday, of a Facebook user in Pakistan, I believe, who's been given the death penalty for posting what is said to be blasphemous. Now, because blasphemy
Facebook is public, and if you're just a friend with one of his friends or one of her friends, you can view their postings. But it's on things like WhatsApp, yeah? And they make a big deal out of it that... all your messages are encrypted. So even though you're told not to, or you're asked not to make incendiary statements, those messages, by and large, are invisible.
Yeah, okay, so there's that. So what happens to governments then, governments around the world, when they want to say, do something good? Let's assume and we accept on face value that being positive and, you know, and being balanced in your view of your own country is a good thing, right? Instead of seeing, you know, your country as the worst of the worst, you say, well, let's put it in comparative perspective.
Well, to that, I reply to these governments. If they want their people to say good things about them, then they should do good things and not, you know,
not do bad things.
Yeah.
Yeah, but what about just the question?
I'm holding my tongue here, sure.
Yeah, I know you do. And I'll hold it for you later on. But, you know, the question is, you know, to what extent can you shape public opinion through these acts of exhortation that the Prime Minister, in this instance, indulged in, right?
Mahatma Gandhi very famously said, if you goodness comes from thinking the one way, acting the same way, and behaving the same way, right? I mean, that's what happens. You can't expect anything else other than, you know, having some consistency in your messages. You can't behave one way and expect your people to behave another way, can you?
Yeah, I think this is a conversation that's got, you know, it's going to be relevant for such a long time, especially if we come...
Legs as long as Usain Bolt.
Yeah, you know, especially if we come out to the general elections, because there's going to be a lot of messaging from political parties, and the question are those messages going to fall on fertile ground, or are they going to be repudiated? Are they going to basically going to have to deal with a tremendous amount of cynicism? And this is for both sides of the political aisle in Malaysian politics, right? Because of the conduct of politicians across the board, none of it has been exemplary, depending on the yardstick you use. So
yeah.
Where do we go from now? We'll be back with more on BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.